Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story, an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that we're going to be away next week and doing a little spring break, but certainly next week we'll be starting baseball again, opening day and so forth, both on the north side and the south side, I thought I'd read a little essay written by Jonathan Eig, who's a great columnist for the Chicago Magazine, but also writes for the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Esquire. Writes about baseball, writes about Chicago gangsters, but this one happens to be about baseball. It's entitled A Diamond in the Rough. Our columnist argues that this could be Chicago's most dismal baseball season in three decades. And Jonathan writes, every baseball fan is an optimist on opening day. Every baseball fan wants to believe there may be relief for the long-suffering, hope for the underdog, and love for the unloved, especially in Chicago. But I've got to be honest, I don't think this is our year. This is the year to move to the south of France, where the newspapers don't carry box scores and your Facebook friends will post mostly bouillabaisse recipes. This is the year to take up chess or knitting or even the reading of objects formerly known as books. Just do yourself a favor, please, and turn off the ball game. Check in a year from now, maybe two. Until further notice, let's not talk about the national pastime, okay? What's that? You're still here? You think I'm kidding? Seriously, this baseball season could be the worst Chicago has seen since 1980 when the Cubs lost 98 games. The Sox lost 90, and the two teams combined to finish 53 games out of first place. I'd rather root for the Royals, Nationals, or Marlins this year than the Cubs or Sox. Those teams have new players worth watching, some works in progress that should be interesting to follow. But with the Cubs and Sox, what have I got to be excited about? Sure, the two new managers, Robin Ventura on the South Side and Dale Swaim up in Wrigleyville, might be fun to watch, but should we really expect either of them to transform their inept charges into champions? Please. That's like a career criminal counting on a new parole officer to turn him around or a two-year-old banking on a new daycare instructor for potty training. Good luck to you guys, Ventura and Swaim, because you've got some messy work ahead. Well, let's look at the Cubs first. They've lost their best power hitter in Aramis Ramirez and made no big free agent moves. Ian Stewart and David DeJesus are nice players, but they're not going to do wonders for the T-shirt vendors on Addison. The starting rotation is mediocre, and the bullpen is a potential disaster. In the same division, the Cardinals, Brewers, and Reds will be stronger than the Cubs. Even the Pirates might knock around the boys in blue. Meanwhile, the White Sox said goodbye to their ace pitcher, Mark Burley, leaving them with an unproven cast of hurlers and a lineup of hitters who haven't been hitting. Adam Dunn was the Titanic in cleats last year, and Alex Rios wasn't much better. Their only reliable slugger, Paul Konerko, just turned 36. If he starts to fade, they're all going down with the ship. Kenny Williams, the GM, says the team will not be spending more money to improve its roster. As for the new hitting coach, Jeff Mickey Manto, over his nine-year career, he hit a paltry 230. Last year, the Sox's marketing slogan was All In. This year, it's Appreciate the Game. Next year, it'll probably be Great Personality. If you're still a hopeless romantic looking for some reason, any reason to believe, I'll give you this. The Cubs have been a poorly coached, undisciplined team the past few years. They haven't taken care of basics, simple things such as hitting the cutoff man and defending against the bunt. A new coach, especially a hard-nosed specimen like Swaim, can make a difference there. Also, the Cubs won't have to face Prince Fielder and Albert Pujols so often this year now that they have moved to the American League. Finally, Theo Epstein and the other new execs seem to have a plan. And it's not difficult to imagine this team winning again, but maybe in 2 or 3 years. As for the Sox, well, remember Mantle's .230 batting average? Turns out that was the same team average for the Sox in 1906, yet those hitless wonders, as they were dubbed, went on to topple the mighty Cubs and win the World Series. So yes, miracles do happen, but probably not this year. A diamond in the rough from Jonathan Eig. Of course, now that I think of it, they predicted the worst winter, and they told everyone they should move out of Chicago because this is going to be the worst winter of the year, so you never know. But quite possibly, the White Sox have the opportunity of not only being the worst team in a division, but the worst team in baseball. Time will tell. Time will tell. And certainly, opening day is in about a week and a half, and we'll certainly see. But of course, Easter's coming up, and well, it's a little chilly now. It's going to be warming up on a regular basis. And of course, one thing to do for Easter on April 5th, 6th, or 7th, go down to our friends down at Swirl's Cupcakes, because Pam Rose, our good pal, Pam Rose at Swirl's Cupcakes, which is, of course, located at 705 West Belden, right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital, has some coconut cupcakes for Easter. These are terrific. Moist coconut or chocolate cake, layer of coconut compote, coconut buttercream swirl, dipped in coconut shavings, garnished with edible basket and candied eggs. Gluten-free and vegan gluten-free varieties also available. These are just beautiful. Not a big coconut fan, but you can get them without coconut if you like. I remember all those, remember those coconut lamb cakes they used to have around Easter? Always a tradition. And this is kind of interesting. Becoming kind of course, Pam will deliver, too. Deliver in Chicago or the suburbs, whatever. Just give them a call at 773-404-2253. Coming up April 2nd, the spring menu change. New flavors include Spumoni, Boston Cream, Tuxedo Crunch, Peanut Butter Twixie, Pineapple Right Side Up, and many more. And then on April 4th, Kerry Wood will make an in-store appearance. Chicago Cubs pitcher Kerry Wood and his lovely family will be on site. Swirls has teamed up with Wood to sell a custom edition red velvet cupcake between April 4th and May 4th, with all the proceeds benefiting the Wood Family Foundation. That's terrific. He's a very, very nice man, very outgoing, certainly very friendly and welcoming, and certainly does a lot for other people. On April 22nd, Swirls starts their Sunday Fun Day due to popular demand, I'm sure. Swirls will be opening doors on Sundays from 12 to 5, so it's something to look forward to, and check it out. And remember, Mother's Day is coming up, May 11th and 12th, for their Mother's Day cupcakes. And I'm sure Pam will send us information about those. Those will be beauties, too. So, again, Swirl's Cupcakes, 705 West Belden, right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital, 773-404-2253. Got a press release for the Prairie District Neighborhood Alliance will host its annual Easter Egg Hunt at Chicago Women's Park and Gardens, featuring a variety of family activities on Saturday, April 7th, from 12 to 2. This popular holiday event is expected to draw over 1,000 people from the South Loop and surrounding communities. The Easter Egg Hunt will begin at 12:15. During the hunt, children will search for over 8,000, brightly colored toy and candy-filled plastic eggs and will be able to win prizes. The egg hunt is recommended for children ages 10 and under. There'll be a separate designated areas for the hunt with an area for the younger children and an area for the older children. Children must be accompanied by an adult. The Easter egg hunt is such a fun event for the kids, and it is just wonderful to see so many of them hunting for eggs all dressed up in their Easter outfits, said Gail Dempsey, board member of the Prairie District Neighborhood Alliance. We know so many residents and neighbors in the South Loop are looking forward to this event. Some of the giveaways will be, great prizes will be White Sox tickets, tickets to the Bulls Sox Academy, the Glessner House Museum, which is in the Prairie Avenue District there, gifts from the aldermen, lots of toys and candies, a lot of great things. And people in the neighborhood are all engaged and invested in making a great day for everybody. It's a great day for the kids to come out. The Chicago Women's Park and Gardens is located at 1801 South Indiana Avenue in Chicago. And for information, 312-401-2688. Again, it's the Prairie District Neighborhood Alliance. It's annual Easter egg hunt on April 7th from 12 to 2. So always good things going on. Don't want to forget to mention, as we did last week, the Starlight Yes Board's Spring Happy Hour. And that's going to be taking place on Thursday, April 5th from 6 to 8 at Rocket Bar and Grill, 22 West Hubbard. Always a great cause for Starlight Children's Foundation. Wonderful people doing wonderful things. And again, if you have an opportunity, go on their website. But that's the Rock, Paper, Scissors Tournament on Thursday, April 5th from 6 to 8 o'clock at Rocket Bar and Grill, 22 West Hubbard. Well, of course, spring is coming up here, and we have not only opening day, but everybody's going away for their spring break. And like I said before, we're going to be taking a week off and come back the week later. But a lot of fun things to be doing, and certainly when the weather gets warm, puts everybody in the mood. All the, I don't know if you notice all the great trees out of the Bradford pears. Those are the white trees, very nicely shaped oval trees, which are in full bloom. Maybe it was the warm weather or the rain we had, but they're just beautiful. And so is so are the magnolias. Of course, they're losing their flowers. Unfortunately, got a little windy and warm, and we didn't have them for a long time. But now the flowering crab apples, those are the pink ones and the red ones that are popping right now. And lavender and the violets are popping up. And great smell, the bushes that are all around us. And very enjoyable to see, especially this kind of weather, when it's a little warm. And hopefully we'll have a nice warm Easter Sunday. Everybody in their Easter best and Easter bonnets, and the little ones in their white dresses, and the young men in their blue blazers and khaki pants, celebrating with their families on Easter. And we hope everybody has a wonderful Easter. Well, we have a full show, very interesting show today, a lot of theater today. And we're going to take a short break and listen to Henry Mancini's CD, the music from the films of Blake Edwards. Had the opportunity, of course, flipping through the TV the other day, and came upon the movie 10 with Dudley Moore and Julie Andrews. And Henry Mancini wrote a great theme for that movie. It was entitled It's Easy to Say, and I think that's what we're going to enjoy right now. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Thank you. Henry Mancini, it's easy to say. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce that Fella will be playing at Chicago's Oriental Theater for 3 weeks through April 15th. Fella, directed by Bill T. Jones, is a provocative hybrid of dance, theater, and music exploring the extravagant world of Afrobeat legend Fela Kuti. The show has become an international sensation, having been performed in three continents. Critics around the country were effusive in their praise. The kinetic energy pulsing from the music and dancing of Fela prompted Ben Brantley of the New York Times to say, "There should be dancing in the streets." Peter Marks of the Washington Post described it as electroshock for the soul. And Charles McNulty added in the Los Angeles Times that Fela was the most exuberant musical I've seen this season. A triumphant tale of courage, passion, and love. Fela is the true story of Kuti, who created a type of music, Afrobeat, and mixed these pounding, eclectic rhythms, a blend of jazz, funk, and African rhythm and harmonies, with incendiary lyrics that openly attack the corrupt and oppressive military dictatorships that rule Nigeria and much of Africa. Featuring many of Fela Kuti's most captivating songs and Bill T. Jones's visionary staging, Fela reveals Kuti's controversial life as an artist and a political activist and celebrates his pioneering music. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning actor who has been seen in Positive, Un Chant d'Amour, and The Lion King, nationally recognized dancer having worked with Dance Theater of Harlem and the Ailey School, accomplished television broadcaster and graduate of the University of West Indies in Jamaica, now starring in the Tony Award-winning hit musical Fela at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph, through April 15th, Mr. Jermaine Rowe. Jermaine, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And we got to start out this way. Now, you and I talked a little earlier. What's the name of your best pal in Jamaica?
Kevin Moore.
How about that? Now, you couldn't invent that, right?
I know, it's great. When I saw your name, I was like, this is so perfect.
Well, congratulations on your great success with Fela, but welcome to Chicago.
Thank you very much. It's been great. I love Chicago. It's one of those cities, again, when you hear you're going to Chicago, because it knows the theater so well. It knows what it's about. So it's excited to be in Chicago. I mean, it's such a beautiful city.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. The weather's a little cool, but it's going to warm up. And certainly, as I said earlier, what you guys do on stage warms everything up.
Yeah, it warms me up, too.
Well, of course, the audience has been very receptive, and they will continue to be receptive. It's a great story, a story about Fela Kuti, certainly an activist in Africa, whose message basically was transparency, honest government, and justice for all. Tell us a little bit about what you've learned from being in the play.
The thing is, as many of the actors who walk into this production, you kind of knew of Fela because you heard his music, but I wasn't fully familiar with everything in his life and his story. So from a book, The Disposition for Life by Carlos Moore's autobiography, we found out so many amazing things about this man. He was, of course, initially about the music and trying to create this new music in Africa, but also he was so passionate about speaking for the people and using music, art, as his weapon, as a way of bridging the gap between the haves and the have-not in a matter of speaking. But he also spoke out against the corruption that was happening in Nigeria at the time. That in a sort of massive sense is happening around the world still, and we still have people, or once in a lifetime or so, we have people who come along who decide to use their life as a way of speaking against these things. So it was very, very beautiful to get to know more about Fela, the person. And as we worked along with this project, we found out more because we got a chance to meet his family as well. His kids, Femi and Sheon and Yemi, they all are very, very active, a part of the production, as well as his manager at the time, Ricky. So we all got a chance to meet these people and interact with them. So it wasn't just a play on a script or, you know, a book. It was real life that we were now trying to imitate. So it was very, very beautiful to be able to do this.
Chris, he developed a music type of Afrobeat, which, as I said before, was kind of a blend of jazz and funk and African rhythm and harmonies, and died at a young age in 1997, 58 years old,
yeah.
And certainly lived a really, really a tough life, Jermaine.
Yeah, it was. I mean, one of the things about the show, we kind of introduce people to his music. Although some people know his music and some people don't know that they know his music until you hear it, you're like, oh my God, that was Fela.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful thing with the show is that it gives you it gives you all this amazing thing, but what it really does initially is to introduce or reintroduce you to how his music was formed. And so at the end of it, you leave and you're like, oh, I want to learn more, because we talk about his influences with James Brown and all the other artists at the time, and how his and he went to London to study music. And, you know, so he wasn't just a musician who liked playing music, and just he went to study the art form, and he was very, very, you know, a part of what he did was invested in training and studying the craft itself, and then it was now able to pass it on. And then, of course, his mother being a very, very important part of his life, was a very big political activist back in Nigeria. That side of him, too, came out as he traveled the world and met Sandra Isadora and all these other people, and now helped to create this politicized life. And so he now merges the music and the politics together, which is what is so beautiful about his story.
Well, of course, his mother and father, both educated people. So it's a sad story, the way his mother met her, and because of the oppression and the sacrifice she had to make for her family. But, you know, it reminds me of that old saying, Jermaine, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And all his talent and his family, we're all invested in changing Nigeria. Has things changed at all? Is it still the same over there?
There, as with every country, I suppose, have its initial struggles. And the thing with what he pointed out mainly, though, was whether or not it fully changes, or has it changed, or was the same way that he was. What's important is that at the end of the day, the voice of the common man is important. And that's what he spoke up against. And today, that message, regardless of how much any country has changed or not, that message is still important. The voice of the regular man is very important. The voice, I mean, and you are part of the society as much as everybody else. And corruption in any way or in any form is unjustified. And so we should never be allowed to be, in a way, minstrels and walking around and just kind of taking, things as they go. We should question things and be open to want to make changes when we see things are happening, and be willing to stand up and speak up for our common man. And so this message, part of her story within the second act, we use one of his famous songs, Coffins for Head of State. And what we do is that we come out with coffins, a symbolic representation of people's struggle and things that we want to put aside or bury, in a sense, the injustices that we see that's going on, both back in the time when Fela was around and now, and as we move forward. So we point to things and people and names and contexts that people can recognize as things we need to look at and say and be honest about, and not a way of beating down and saying that's wrong or that's right, but a way of saying, let's recognize that at the end of the day, the human spirit is the most beautiful thing that we have. So let's preserve it and let's cherish it. And that was this beautiful message that I personally take away from.
And with this play and this musical, very well said, by the way, Jermaine, with this musical, as unlike some plays or musicals that you go to the theater, you will go to this theatrical piece and it will stimulate and engage your imagination, and it will stimulate and engage, you know, your intellect, and it will stimulate and engage all the capacities to find out more about Fela, and certainly about what he was all about, because basically we say here's a man that lived his faith and maybe even became a martyr for it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, he wasn't the perfect man, and nobody is. And at the end of the day, I, as a young individual, look at his life, and, you know, you see all other things. And from a Western society, don't fully understand how somebody has 27 wives and lived a hard life as he did. But you have to stop and recognize some of the beautiful things as well. And so the thing with this production is that Bill T. Jones, along with all the other collaborators, saw this artistic vision and now put it on stage. And, of course, now there's so many things of his life that you could talk about, but the way the production decided to go with his life was a very, in a sense, present-day thing, in terms of now Fela is still alive and this is what we're looking at, and as a result, these are the lessons that you can take from it. And so, just like Fela, who was very unconventional in the way he went around his music and his politics, the play itself is unconventional in the way it goes about. So it's not like anything you've really ever seen before. And a lot of productions, I've been very, very fortunate to work with a lot of productions, a lot of work. But this is very, very special because it still allows me, while doing 8 shows a week, to be an artist, not to just be some, you know, going on stage and doing the same show 8 times a week. But you truly are allowed to be artistic in the way you come out. And the way the audience reacts to you every night drives you as well, in a very beautiful artistic way. So that's why this production is very, very beautiful and very, very different but in a great way.
Well, certainly one of the few shows, as I said earlier, where you walk out of the theater with more energy than when you walked in.
Yeah, you do, because we want you to participate. You walk into Fella's Shrine, which is, you know, his nightclub, and we want you to be in his nightclub. So at some point you feel like getting up and dancing or singing along with the music, please, we want you to. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about this production. Well, every time you go to a Broadway show, we say to you, come on, get up and dance.
It reminds me, of course, you had the opportunity of being in the great Disney musical Lion King. I always felt that the opening number of The Lion King, when all the animals are walking, was the most intriguing and the most exciting thing I've ever seen in theater, because it gives you goosebumps when it happens. And this is not dissimilar to that.
No, it's not. I mean, great theater moments are great theater moments. Right. No matter, you know, what show it in, what production, what city you see it in. And the beautiful thing with this production is that the great theater moments happening throughout. And I did have the same reaction when I did and saw Lion King for the first time. But this show also, I get the same feeling as I walk through the house at the top of the show with San Goja or Adeshila, who plays Fela. And you look around and you see people, they get really excited. And they really, really do suspend belief and say, oh my God, it is Fela. It is Fela. And they get so excited, and it's beautiful to see that. And as we have them dance with us, they get, sometimes they're a little shy, but then eventually the music with the band, that's an amazing band, they end up taking the show and taking it to another level, and you really feel like you are back in Nigeria in the 70s partying with Fela.
Well, you're pretty lucky to be in such great productions like Fela and Lion King. Good Lord. I don't know if you can do a dramatic play or not, because, boy, you got a lot of excitement going on here.
It's fantastic.
And how long are you in the cast of Fela?
Well, I started because the current production right now, and the beautiful thing about the cast is that it has a very international cast. Mm-hmm. So it started on off-Broadway, then went to Broadway. And then while it was on Broadway, it started at the National Theatre in London. And that's when I joined the cast. I joined the cast about a year and a half ago when it first opened in London. And so I've been with the cast for a year and a half. But now what you see on the touring cast came together in Europe, half of the Broadway cast, half of the National Theatre cast in London. And we did a European stint for about 3 or so months. And then we came across to America in last September. So right now on stage you see French nationality, Americans, Caribbean people. You have people from – it's such an international cast. It's so amazing. And – everybody loved the music. So it speaks to the audience as well that comes to see the show from all over the world. And having done the show in so many different countries across the world, it's beautiful how the art, the music, dance connect people in a way that in some countries that we went to at the end of the show, people wanted to come on stage and dance with us. You know, we have shows where we sometimes, you know, you're on stage dancing a big number and somebody just runs on the stage, wants to dance with you. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry, you can't be on stage. I mean, thank you so much, but this is a liability. And so, I mean, that, and what other show does that, you know? Your audience members are just want to run on stage and be a part of it because they feel so connected to it.
Well, thanks for making a stop in Chicago, because we're all enjoying it. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce that Fela will be playing at Chicago's Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph, for 3 weeks through April 15th. Fela, directed by Bill T. Jones, is a provocative hybrid of dance, theater, and music, exploring the extravagant world of Afrobeat legend Fela Kuti. The show has become an international sensation, having been performed on 3 continents. And on the line with us right now is one of the stars of Fela, Jermaine Rowe. Jermaine, I really appreciate it. We had a delightful chat with you. I wish we could take a little longer. But
I know. You're the best, Kevin.
Enjoy your time in Chicago here. And I might run into you anyway. But
Come on down again.
I might do that. And certainly, thanks for stopping by and chatting with us a little bit. And when I get down to Jamaica, I'm going to look up that other Kevin Moore.
Okay, I'll tell him to look out for you. All right, take care.
Thank you, my pal.
Okay.
Jermaine Rowe from Fela at the Oriental Theater through April 15th for tickets 800-775-2000. Geez, what a terrific gentleman, and certainly very talented man, and what a great and energetic play down at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph. It's going to be here for a few weeks through April 15th. You have the opportunity to get down there. And, of course, great message of transparency, honest government, and justice for all. Some things are timeless, and it's not only limited to the Nigerian government, but I suppose a lot of other ones. You know, since it's Easter coming up, of course, funny story. 3 men died and are awaiting judgment. St. Peter tells them that to get into heaven, each must describe the meaning of Easter. Well, the first man says, every Easter, We celebrate the birth of the baby Jesus. We decorate an Easter tree, sing Easter carols, hang Easter stockings, send Easter cards. Well, St. Peter cuts him off, of course, scowling, presses a button, and dispatches him to hell. The next man begins a little bit nervously, and he says, "To commemorate Easter, the Chicago River is painted green, festive Easter corned beef and cabbage is consumed, and green Easter beer is drunk." His speech is interrupted as he, too, is projected down to the pit. Well, the third man is even more nervous and thinks for a second, and he says, "Okay, on Good Friday, St. Peter, the Romans crucified our Lord Jesus Christ," the man begins. "He appeared to be dead, and his followers, deeply saddened, took him to a cave, placed his body in the cave, and rolled a giant rock in the entrance." "Very good," says St. Peter, encouragingly. The man continued, "His followers kept a vigil for 2 days and nights in front of the cave," says the third man, growing in confidence. "On Easter Sunday, they were amazed to see the stone roll away, and there was Jesus, alive. He came out of the cave." "Excellent," says St. Peter, reaching for the key to heaven. "Please go on." "Yes," said the man, continuing. "Jesus came out of the cave, looked around, and saw his shadow, which meant 6 more weeks of winter." Well, a little joke. But anyway, if you get a chance, go down and see Fella at the Oriental Theater, 24 West Randolph, through April 15th. Again, tickets 800-775-2000. The critically acclaimed theater company Theo Ubique will present the popular award-winning musical The Light in the Piazza through April 29th. Set in Florence and Rome in 1953, a young American tourist traveling with her mother meets and falls for a young Italian. The mother opposes the affair for reasons that only gradually become apparent as the musical unfolds. Music and lyrics are by Adam Gatell, the grandson of Richard Rodgers, based on the novella by Elizabeth Spencer. "We're excited to present this rich and sophisticated story," says artistic director Fred Anzavino, one of the show's two directors. Co-director Brenda Didier agreed, adding, "This intricately classic score is the perfect complement to an Italian love story and is sure to be an audience favorite." And on the line with us right now is the Jeff Award-winning director for such classics as Evita and Cabaret, co-founder of Theo Ubique, community leader, performer who has studied at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, actor, teacher, mentor, and one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater, and the artistic director of Theo Ubique, now presenting the award-winning musical The Light in the Piazza through April 29th at No Exit Cafe, 6970 North Glenwood in Rogers Park, Mr. Fred Anzavino. Fred, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Good afternoon, Kevin. How are you?
Very fine, and great to have you, and certainly congratulations on one of my favorite contemporary musicals, The Light in the Piazza.
Thank you very much, sir.
A beautiful story about people taking a little passeggiata in the courtyards of Firenze and certainly enjoying an evening in each other's company.
Wouldn't it be nice to be there right now?
Oh, I know. I wouldn't. Well, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I'll tell you. The Light in the Piazza was an idea given to me a couple of years back. I mean, we all know the history of it. It started out in Seattle, and then it moved to the Goodman Theater, and it was a big success at the Goodman, and then it moved on to New York and Broadway. So it's been a while since it had, like, its Broadway show going on there. And, you know, we're always looking for interesting, creative musicals to present to our Chicago audiences, and it was suggested to me by one of the theater leaders in this town. I won't use his name because I don't want to embarrass him, but he said, "Fred, after seeing a couple of our shows in the past," he goes, "you know what? He had directed a production of it back in the suburbs of Chicago and said, I did a very small production of it, and I want you to look at it, and here's the DVD of what we did with it." And I thought, after I looked at it, I said, "Wow, this is really cool. It's it could fit in a small theater like ours." And I decided to choose it for our 2011-2012 season.
Well, it's a great love story, a great musical, of course, written by Richard Rodgers' grandson, and just a beautiful story. It goes back to when Roxana Brazzi and Olivia de Havilland and a young George Hamilton was Fabrizio Naccarelli.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm Italian. You know, I come from the East Coast. I'm 100% Italian, and I fell in love with the piece. I mean, half of the piece itself is in Italian, not only dialect, but language. Mm-hmm. The language, the book is written in Italian. So the performers have to learn how to speak Italian as well as have a Italian dialect. So it's quite beautiful. One of the things that I loved about it is no matter what the language is, through action you can tell what's going on that stage, because words really don't mean anything. It's what's going on behind the words, and that's what we hope that we achieve when you see our production.
Well, certainly everybody, Fred, likes a love story, and this is certainly a great love story. A young woman who is, what would you say, developmentally delayed, and her suitor, Fabrizio, the Naccarelli family, find out about that, and her mother, of course, concerned that will she be able to live a normal life as the mother is kind of in conflict with the father. But the love rings true, and certainly everybody lives happily ever after, which you love in a story.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because the way they meet, she's in the piazza, the young girl's in the piazza, and her hat flies off her head.
Yeah.
And the Italian boy catches the hat midstream in the air, and she turns around, and there he is, this, you know, handsome young Italian man holding her hat, and she falls in love. It's love at first sight, really. What I was going to say is, what did you had mentioned something that was very interesting. You said that it was a love story. And, I know. The girl, you know, and her mental handicap. That's an interesting point, because we discovered, you know, perhaps it may have been, and this is just our take on it, perhaps it is a misdiagnosis. I think what happens to the young girl when she's a young girl, she's like 12 years old, she gets for a pony ride, her mom, for her birthday party, hires out a little pony and the guy, and they take her for a little ride on the pony, and she falls off the pony, and the pony kicks her in the head. And then the doctors say that she's going to have these problems and these problems and these problems, etc. And as she grows up, it's the parents who have inflicted all that information on this child and protected her against society and treated her like she was a handicapped girl. And now as we explored and went into delved into the character more deeply, it seems that possibly the child is not really as mentally handicapped as we think she is.
Yeah, and I think that's a little strong. As I said before, I think she was developmentally delayed, and I think that's, you know, she might have, if that's the story, and again, the story was written in the 50s, I think, by Elizabeth Spencer, she maybe had a mild concussion, and she was smothered by her parents, you know, kind of what they call them, helicopter parents, and there she was an only child, and didn't give her a chance to maybe mature, especially in the early 50s and so forth into the 60s, and they didn't allow her emotional or intellectual growth to blossom until...
I think that's the perfect way to put
it.
That's exactly how we've been looking at it, because when you see the young lady... there's really nothing wrong with her, really.
Sure.
You know, and I think that you hit it on the nose. They helicoptered into diagnosis and presuming that this was the case because this is what they were told. And back in the 50s, you don't question that kind of stuff. You follow suit of what the diagnosis was, and they smothered her to death and didn't allow her to grow up. But it seems to me that the adults in this production... have more problems than the young girl does, you know?
Well, a lot of metamorphosis. Of course, Clara changes, and the mother changes, too, given the relationship she has with her husband back in the United States. And I'm sure... No, on the other hand, now I'm thinking of it, Fred. Maybe you would have liked to play that role of Fabrizio Naccarelli.
Well, actually, I actually would like to play Signor Naccarelli.
Giuseppe Naccarelli, that's right.
You know what I mean? Those days are gone, Kevin.
You know, you have done such great things. I'm just looking at some of the history of Theo Ubaque. Of course, Cats, Some Enchanted Evening, The Songs of Rodgers and Hammerstein, which you're going to be doing, of course, out at the Noble Fool Theater with our good pal John Golic out in St. Charles. Taming of the Shrew, Man of La Mancha, Chess, Sweet and Hot, The Songs of Harold Ireland, Cabaret, The Fantastics, one of my favorite. Try to Remember, of course, one of the great songs. Kurt Vile Review and Evita. Just some great stuff, and every season seems to be a hit one after the other.
You know, I think we have a very unique venue, a very unique concept. We're called Theo Ubaque Cabaret Theater, and we kind of marry cabaret and theater and put them together. You know, we work out of the No Exit Cafe, which is also it's a small cafe. It seats about 60 people. It has a small kitchen in there, so we serve dinner and liquor, and the waiters and waitresses are also the performers.
Mm.
So as you walk, the minute you walk in, every show has a particular theme. For the piazza, you have greeting you when you walk in is the hostess is one of the ensemble members in Italian dialect, you know, buongiorno, you know, and we should like to say, you know, I don't speak Italian very well. I should be ashamed of myself. But, you know, we create an environment the very minute you step into the cafe, and I should say piazza for this venue. And that's a very unique experience for people. And we create these big musicals on the small little stage. And I think that's what we have going for us at this point, because there's really no other venue that's like the one that we're playing in and that we've created.
Well, I think you say unique, and that's a good word to describe it. And I think what you have that another a lot of people don't have is the intimacy of that space, and the intimacy of a space. Seeing a musical like The Light in the Piazza or some of these other musicals, you don't get in a larger venue, and it makes almost the audience feel as if they're participatory in the whole process.
Well, and what's important is every show, every song is a story. Whether it's a show overall is a story, or a song is a storytelling process. And I think that what the audience becomes your scene partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come out of the fourth wall, they break the fourth wall, and a lot of times characters look to the audience for some answers, you know, and share their experiences with the audience. And in a big venue where you don't have that aesthetic distance, you don't get that intimacy, and I think that's where we really grab their hearts.
I hope the success continues for Theo Bucquet, because you always come up with such good ideas, and certainly the audiences have been very responsive. What's coming up for next season? Anything you can...
I'm working on that.
Are you working? Okay.
Yeah, it's tough. It's like every year we keep knocking it out of the park.
You got to tap yourself. It's tough to do.
Yeah, and what's hard is that we're non-equity. We're a non-equity company, mm-hmm. So the licensing gets a little more difficult for some of the real hot shows that come out of New York. You know, of course, the equity shows in Chicago,
sure.
Equity houses in Chicago get the rights and right away, and we have to usually wait. So we always have to reinvent ourselves, you know, and challenge ourselves. And I always like to pick projects that when I say, oh, we're doing such and such a play, they mean like, what are you doing? And I know that's a good sign when I say that, because then, you know, if we can pull it off, we can really pull it off, you know.
Well, you've been pulling it off. That's the truth. Piazza, which spins the poignant story adapted from Elizabeth Spencer's 1960 novella of the same name of Margaret and Clara Johnson, an American mother and daughter who travel to Florence in the summer of 53, discovering some unexpected truth about themselves and about the power of love and of beauty along the way. During its 14-year history, Theo Ubuque has produced 35 productions, receiving 25 non-equity Jeff Awards, 3 Broadway World Chicago Fan Awards, and 3 After Dark Awards along the way. The name Theo Bucquet is a combination of Greek and Latin words reflecting the company's mission to engage actors and audiences in an intimate and honest conversation with great theatrical and musical works. The critically acclaimed theater company Theo Bucquet will present the popular award-winning musical The Light in the Piazza.
Kevin, we're extending until May 20th at this point.
Oh, beautiful. May 20th.
Possible more.
Yeah, and I hope it's more. And on the line with us, of course, is the artistic director and co-founder, Fred Anzavino of Theo Bucquet. Fred, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some information?
Sure. We are at www.theoubique.org. Or for tickets, you can call 773-347-1109.
Well, we are on each other's radar because of the great job Alyssa Turner has done, and I'm so happy about that, because we need to be getting the word out of the great things you're doing and keep this great dynamic.
Sounds good. I'm open to it, Kevin.
Continued success, and I'm going to wish you and your family a happy Easter.
Thank you, sir. Happy Easter to you as well.
Thanks very much, Fred.
All right, bye-bye.
Fred Anzavino, of course, the artistic director and co-founder of Theo Ubuque, who up at the No Exit Cafe, 6970 North Glenwood in Rogers Park, producing The Light in the Piazza, great musical, and through, of course, as he says, through May 20th. Again, for information, 773-347-1109. CCPA presents Vivid 2012 on April 10th, a free evening of musical theater and jazz at the Auditorium Theater, the Chicago premiere of Will Reynolds' The Greenwood Tree, and a unique program of stylistically diverse jazz and contemporary music groups will be featured as Roosevelt's Chicago College of the Performing Arts presents Vivid 2012 at 7:30, April 10th at the Auditorium Theater. The second half of Vivid will present performances by several ensembles of CCPA's Jazz and Contemporary Music Studies program, which is headed by the great Paul Wertico, a 7-time Grammy Award winner, former member of the Pat Metheny Group, and a member of the Larry Coryell Trio and Paul Wertico's Mideast Midwest Alliance. And on the line with us right now is the hailed by the press as one of the most versatile and musical drummers in the world today, award-winning percussionist, having played and been an integral part of the success of the Grammy Award-winning Pat Metheny Group, a master of the drums in such genres as jazz, rock, funk, blues, gospel, and fusion, former Tribune Chicagoan of the Year, and the head of Jazz and Contemporary Music Studies at the Chicago College of the Performing Arts of Roosevelt University, now presenting Vivid 2012, Tuesday, April 10th at 7:30 at the Auditorium Theater. Our good pal, Mr. Paul Wertico. Paulie, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Great to be here.
Always a pleasure. Boy, we're looking forward to April 10th.
Me too. This is going to be spectacular this year. I mean, not that it hasn't been in the past.
You say that every year, and every year you outdo yourself.
Well, thanks, but that's, you know, it's actually the students that are outdoing themselves.
Yeah, you got to be proud of that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that this year's program, you know, it's great to have the second half, which, you know, puts the heat on us to deliver, but also, you know, the way the program is situated is that even if someone doesn't think they like jazz, they will love this because the music, you know, there's music of Stevie Wonder, there's music of, Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein, there's Brazilian music, Afro-Cuban music. I mean, it's going to groove. It's going to be hard for people to sit in their seats, actually.
You know, I just had somebody on the show from the musical Fela, which is an Afrobeat type of music,
okay. And
it's in Chicago right now. And that's what you do so well, Paula. You put all these things together. You adapt from one style to the other and put them together flawlessly and in such a continuity that people just enjoy it. And those kids learn from you so well, they become very accomplished musicians themselves.
Thank you. Well, the whole idea, I mean, I guess I was lucky when I grew up. I really didn't necessarily just, you know, segregate different types of music. I mean, I would, you know, I'd be listening to Cream, and then I'd listen to John Coltrane, and then I'd listen to, you know, Buddhist monk music. I mean, so it all just was music to me, and that's the way I kind of look at it. I mean, jazz, the word jazz is obviously certain styles, but to me, it's also a way of looking at life. It's about improvisation. It's about, you know, being fresh and new, and that can work with any type of music. So hopefully that's, you know, it seems like the students are much more open-minded when you take that kind of approach, as opposed to, you know, saying this is this kind of music and this does that but not this, and then this other one does that but not that, the other thing. That really kind of limits the possibilities, and the sky should be the limit, you know.
And I thought you were in reform school. I didn't remember you did that.
Maybe I was. I don't remember.
But, you know, it's funny. You say, you know, you're going to be doing some work from Rodgers and Hammerstein, of course, great partners in the American Songbook. Yet you have Stevie Wonder. Yet you have Miles Davis. You have McCoy Tyner. You have a whole group of a melting pot of different types of styles and genres.
Well, what I did, on this particular Vivid is, since it's an election year, and, you know, since our, you know, we have a lot of problems with the government agreeing on anything nowadays, I kind of, you know, looked at jazz as being this, you know, it's, you know, American-born art form, but it's also sort of a utopia when you really look at how it functions, because you have individuals that have unique identities on their instruments or as vocalists, and yet when you put an ensemble together, they have to work together. So you try to keep as much individuality as you can, but at the same time, you know, you have to blend. And it's sort of the way I looked at this program is that, okay, we're taking music from different artists, you know, from pop areas, from, you know, Broadway musicals, from all over the world. I mean, the ECM combo is playing music that's sort of, you know, a kind of a European aesthetic. But if they do Oh, What a Beautiful Morning from Oklahoma, they're going to do it in a completely different way than, you know, Robert Preston singing it. And then
if you look at Brazilian music and Afro-Cuban music, I mean, there's improvisational styles, but it also sounds different. The rhythms are different. So that's the way I kind of put the whole thing together with this sort of tie-in that I think people will really enjoy, because it'll make you wonder, like, wow, that's really, everybody should be like this, you know?
You know, it's interesting. You know, you have Chuck Middleton, a great president of our university. Of course, I'm very honored to serve on the board of the Chicago College of the Performing Arts, and Jim Gondry, of course, who was head of our department and theater school and so forth. And then we have, of course, Henry Fogel, who's taken over the reins and done just a remarkable job, and you yourself in charge of the jazz and music studies, and Louis Perez and dance, and Sean is in charge of theater and so forth. You guys have to be just beside yourself having such a group of talented people that are so supportive of you and just say, you know what, you guys know your stuff, go do it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing with this school is that, you know, when Henry Fogel came in, all of a sudden, you know, he said, we want to have Vivid and we want jazz. And I was like, yes. And so he was, you know, totally like, I could do whatever I want, because he trusted that what we were going to do was going to be the best it could be. And everybody, you know, sometimes I look at the faculty here, and I look at the administration, and I look at the students, and I'm so proud to be at this school. You know, it's really something.
Now, do you enjoy the teaching, or do you still miss? I mean, of course, you still do your gigs yourself, and you still entertain, of course, and you still perform. It must be great to have a mix of all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've always taught, and I really do love teaching, because you know, and now I'm old enough that all of a sudden, you know, some of my students are famous. I mean, Glenn Cochee from Wilco is on the cover of Modern Drummer.
Oh, wow.
And I just had him do a master class like last week. And, you know, he mentions even in Modern Drummer about studying with me, and other, you know, Hannah Ford's out there and all these other drummers. So that's the one kind of cool thing, is that you see that even when you told people things a long time ago that you don't even remember telling them, it made an impression on them that now you can see it. And it's like, wow, did I really say that? And it's also like when you're doing it, you know, you constantly learn. I mean, there's times where, you know, you're with a student and maybe they're not quite getting something you're trying to present, so you have to find new ways to get it to them. So it's almost like improvising in a lot of ways.
Did you learn how to read music when you were starting out as a drummer, and do drummers need to be adept at reading music?
Yeah, I was lucky because, you know, I play timpani and everything, so I learned to read music, and it really... I mean, nowadays it's funny to say, almost say so, but you know, a lot of people, you know, and gigs, it's not the same as it used to be, because in the times I remember when I was growing up, I mean, everything was charts, and you know, you go mm-hmm. to the studio, you have to read things down. Nowadays, a lot of stuff is just by ear again. I mean, people send mm-hmm. you an MP3 or whatever, but I think what really helps is that when you look at music, it's just notes on a paper. It's just black dots. But how do you make that come alive? It's just like with a book. I mean, you know, words are just on paper are nothing really by themselves. But how they're put together is what gives it imagery, what makes people dream, what makes a good book versus an okay book. And it's the same with music.
Well, when you're playing jazz, let's say you're at the showcase or something like that, Paulie, mm-hmm. It's kind of improvisational, though, isn't it? You kind of go with the feel of what everybody's doing with the group?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes, you know, people get the misconception of what jazz really is. And again, there's lots of different jazz. I mean, so, you know, so the swing era, big band era, a lot of the music was written out. Even a lot of the solos were worked out ahead of time because people wanted to hear the same solo, you know, in a different city every night. But a lot of the music that I end up playing, I mean, my last record, Impressions of a City, was 100% improvised from the start with a band that I'd never played with before. You know, we went right in the studio. So it runs the gamut. But most things, by and large, I mean, you know, you have songs that can be either a jazz standard or can be, you know, a pop hit or whatever the vehicle is to make music on. And then people forget that when the melody is done, the solos start, but the solos are basically playing over the same chord changes as the melody. I mean, there's obviously different voicings and stuff depending on who's playing, but what you're trying to do when you solo is sort of come up with new melodies and come up with things that are just as good as the original melody. And people kind of think that, you know, a lot of jazz musicians just go off on a tangent, just play whatever the heck they want, which isn't usually the case unless you're playing totally free jazz. And even then, you're still trying to communicate.
When you were learning, of course, you mentioned Cream. I remember, wasn't the drummer Ginger Baker for Cream? And did you look up to people like Buddy Rich or Gene Krupa? Who were your kind of idols or mentors when you were starting to learn?
Well, that's why I was really lucky. I mean, I looked at all those people, and I actually knew a lot of those people. I got, you know, knew Buddy really well. And I was lucky because when I started out playing drums, I really didn't take formal drum set lessons. My mom was just, you know, she was like, no, just play the way you play. So even though I had enough technique from, you know, learning concert band stuff, I just sat down with a kid and I could just play it. But then when I was about 15, I started going in Chicago, take the train down there to go to the Rose Records and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the famous drummer, Barrett Deems, who...
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He kind of took a liking to me, and he would let me play with, you know, all these incredible musicians that he was playing with, sitting in and everything. And that's sort of really, you know, it was very encouraging. And one of the coolest things that ever happened to me, I, a lot of times I forget to tell this, but I tell this to students sometimes, is that I was playing a gig, you know, I'm really in my early 20s, and there was a bass player named Eddie Calhoun, who is famous for playing with Errol Garner. And he's, you know, he's like 60, 70 by that time. And we get on the break, and he goes, kid, you'll always work. And I was like, what? And he goes, no, you know, you'll always work. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, kid, you play happy drums. You make people feel good the way you play the drums. And I was like, wow, what a cool comment, especially coming from like this amazing, legendary bass player. And that's really, in some ways, what it's about. I mean, when you play music, it's not just about, you know, us. It's about the audience. It's about communicating something that hopefully just makes the world, you know, a more enlightened place one way or the other.
Well, we're going to be happy on April 10th. CCPA presents Vivid 2012 on April 10th, a free evening of musical theater and jazz at the Auditorium Theater. The Chicago premiere of Will Reynolds' The Greenwood Tree and a unique program of stylistically diverse jazz and contemporary music groups will be featured as Roosevelt's Chicago College of the Performing Arts presents Vivid 2012 at 7:30, April 10th at the Auditorium Theater. Online with us right now, of course, our good pal Paul Wartico, who's the head of the Jazz and Contemporary Music Studies at the Chicago College of the Performing Arts of Roosevelt University. Paul, I'm going to give a phone number if people like to get tickets, 312-341-2238. Always a pleasure, my pal, and you and I have to spend a little more time just talking about music, talking about jazz, talking about drumming, you know, coming up soon, and I'd look forward to that.
Love to, Kevin. It's always a pleasure. So, yeah, we'll definitely have to hang out.
God bless you, my pal. Thanks for your time.
You too.
Thanks. Take care, bud. Paulie Wartico, of course, from the Roosevelt University Chicago College of the Performing Arts, now presenting Vivid 2012, Tuesday, April 10th at 7:30 at the Auditorium Theater. For information, 312-341-2238. Always a pleasure talking with Paul. Of course, I want to talk a little bit about Holy Week. The liturgies of Holy Week, beginning with tomorrow's celebration of Palm Sunday of the Lord's Passion, are the richest, most profound celebrations in the liturgical year. Begin with the entering the city of Jerusalem with the Lord and his disciples on the sacred day of Palm Sunday. Return on Thursday evening to celebrate the evening Mass of the Lord's Supper with its foot-washing service and transfer of the Holy Eucharist. Friday will see us proclaiming Good Friday, the Passion, according to St. John, followed by the powerful veneration of the cross. The Easter Vigil on Saturday night, while perhaps the longest liturgy of the year, is really the Mass of all Masses. During that holy night, we light a fire in the darkness, proclaim Christ our light, and listen to the great stories of salvation. It is only when we have fully celebrated the Passion, Death, and Resurrection of Christ in these three sacred days, the Triduum, that we then initiate new members into the family of God. Something to look forward to, of course, as we enter into, again, Holy Week and looking forward to Easter Sunday. Well, that about does it for our show today. Thank you for sharing this last hour with me, and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Jermaine Rowe, of course, starring in Fell at the Oriental Theater through April 15th. For information, 800-775-2000. Fred Anzavino at the Theo Ubique, now presenting the award-winning musical The Light in the Piazza at the No Exit Cafe, 6970 North Glenwood in Rogers Park. For information, 773-347-1109. And Paulie Wartico, Vivid 2012, Tuesday, April 10th at 7:30 at the Auditorium Theater. For information, 312-341-2238. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Happy Easter, and have a great day.
Lose yourself to someone and never lose your way. How do you not run out of new things to say? if we know we're always changing? Why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear. In your eyes I may not see forever. Best of friends.